Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Jordan Sava. In this episode, we are joined by Ben Derman, Assistant Professor of Medicine at the University of Chicago Medical Center, to discuss his presentation from the 2023 American Society of Hematology Annual Meeting, along with updates regarding minimal residual disease in multiple myeloma. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Derman. To kick off our conversation, would you mind giving an overview of the background, methods, design, and findings of the trial that you were a part of at ASH 2023?
Right now.
Yeah, so one of the abstracts that I was really excited about was involving MRD, but in myeloma. But traditionally, when we're talking about MRD in myeloma, we're talking about bone marrow assays. Taking aspirate or a liquid sample from the bone marrow, analyzing that, whether it be by next generation sequencing or in some cases flow cytometry. But one of the interesting things that we looked into was, you know, are there peripheral blood assays or peripheral blood tests for MRD or measurable residual disease in myeloma that could solve some issues with bone marrow aspiration? So the first thing is for the patient, you know, bone marrow aspiration can be an uncomfortable experience. And while we do a lot of them, you know, obviously, if you were to offer patients a choice, they would definitely prefer peripheral blood. But there are other occasional issues with bone marrow aspirate when you're looking for MRD in myeloma, which is that myeloma itself is a patchy disease. So if you put the needle in one place of the bone marrow, you may get a different result than if you put the needle somewhere else. Myeloma also has the capability of relapsing or persisting in extramedullary component, meaning outside of the bone marrow as a soft tissue lesion or even in bones, but not in the typical iliac crest where we sample bone marrow. So these can lead to false negative MRD tests when you're looking at bone marrow only assessments. The issue has been so far that when you are doing peripheral blood assessments, there is typically a lower sensitivity of those tests for MRD. And the reason is that, you know, basically myeloma doesn't like to live in the peripheral blood. Now there are a couple of different methods that are being investigated. The first that came was using mass spectrometry, and mass spectrometry uses peripheral blood testing, looking for specifically the myeloma protein of the patient. Now, that can be a very good test. The issue with mass spectrometry is that you have to wait a decent amount of time before it's a reliable result. And that's because myeloma proteins, especially IgG antibody, IgG isotype myelomas, those proteins get recycled. So you could have a situation where you've killed every myeloma cell in the bone marrow, but the vestiges of the protein that it made may live on for weeks, months, sometimes even a year or longer after you've eradicated the tumor itself. And that is a little bit of a challenge, because one of the things that we're always trying to figure out is, can we measure MRD in the peripheral blood early? Is there an assay that could be used? And that's where we thought next generation sequencing would be very appropriate, using clonoSEQ. So what we did with this study is we investigated sort of the prognostic significance of early MRD status after four cycles of a treatment with a four drug regimen called ELO-KRD. Using next generation sequencing. And we actually paired it with bone marrow and peripheral blood. So in this trial that we took the samples from, we've previously reported on it in JAMA Oncology in 2022, patients received essentially 12 cycles of elotuzumab, carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone. They had MRD testing performed after four cycles, eight cycles, 12 cycles. And then based on the MRD result, patients would receive a different regimen, either continuing the carfilzomib or discontinuing it. So we had 46 patients in this study. Not all of those patients were evaluable for this component, this sub-study. We had 34 patients with bone marrow MRD results, and we had 31 patients with peripheral blood MRD results at cycle 4. We also looked at conventional responses using the International Myeloma Working Group. So, partial response, very good partial response, complete response, et cetera. And when we updated our follow-up of patients on the study, so we had a median follow-up of 45 months overall. This is for all 46 patients. There were 13 progression events and 11 deaths, 9 of which were from progression. This generated a 4-year progression-free survival of 73%, which we think actually compares pretty favorably when you consider the fact that almost half, 48% of the patients had at least one high-risk cytogenetic abnormality, and 17% had at least two high-risk cytogenetic abnormalities. Now, when we looked at progression-free survival stratified only by conventional IMWG response, so in other words, those who achieved a complete response or better versus those who were less than a complete response at cycle 4, we found no differences at all in progression-free survival. In other words, this was simply too early of a time point for to see any distinction by IMWG responses. If you look at bone marrow MRD by next-generation sequencing with a cutoff of 10 to the minus 5, so 1 in 100,000 cells at cycle 4, what we found is very significant difference in progression-free survival. This is not surprising. We've seen this before, but it was a highly significant result. In fact, none of the patients who achieved MRD negativity by next-gen sequencing in the bone marrow had any progression or death on the study. Now, when you look at peripheral blood, the same thing. So progression-free survival by peripheral blood MRD testing using NGS at cycle 4, we actually see also an even stronger separation of the curves, that patients who are MRD negative by in the peripheral blood have significantly was associated with significantly superior PFS compared to those who had peripheral blood MRD positivity. And it's not just progression-free survival, it's actually also overall survival. In fact, peripheral blood MRD negativity at cycle 4 was associated with superior overall survival compared to peripheral blood MRD positivity. Then we asked one more question, which was, of the patients who had a positive result, both in the bone marrow and the peripheral blood, of which there were 19 samples overall, what was the correlation, and what was the median log difference? So in other words, how less sensitive is the blood? And what we found is pretty much verifying what we've seen before, that the median log difference was 1.38. It did range from 0.07 to 3. So what that meant is that, the peripheral blood is about 1 to 2 log less sensitive than bone marrow. And previous mostly pilot data had suggested that it might be about 2 log difference. We're seeing more like 1 to 2 log. And then, when we look at progression serving as the reference standard, peripheral blood MRD positivity actually carries a very high specificity of around 86%, the sensitivity of only 67%, though. So I think what that is telling us is that a positive result is probably is typically much more instructive than a negative result right now. But what are the implications of this? I think it does need some validation in a much larger study. But I think it says that peripheral blood MRD is a potential indicator not only of deep early responses, but could be a marker of high-risk disease features. So in other words, the same reason that myeloma with detectable circulating tumor cells in the blood at diagnosis is a bad prognostic factor. We think this is also showing the same thing, that at cycle 4, even if you can detect small amounts of circulating tumor cells, which is represented by a positive NGS result, that is a sign that this is, worse prognosis.
Thank you so much for that answer. And what would you say are the treatment implications based on these results?
I think the treatment implications of this are pretty vast. In particular, everybody's talking about who needs a stem cell transplant. And when you look at all comers, we see progression-free survival differences in favor of transplant, but no overall survival difference. High-risk patients tend to benefit the most. But I think, to me, one of the biggest questions is, bone marrow MRD testing is usually almost too sensitive at the cycle four time point, with the sense that I don't know that a negative, most people are going to be positive, so you can't really distinguish who should go to transplant versus not using that time point. But maybe peripheral blood would be a really valuable signal for those who should go through intensification of therapy.
Moving forward, what are the key takeaways from the study, and what should a community oncologist know about this research?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the community oncologist, one of the things that I'm taking away from this study is the fact that, this is a clonoSEQ is a standardized test. It can be ordered, essentially from any practice. And peripheral blood is as easy to do as anything, right? Peripheral blood testing, while we have to understand that it's not as sensitive as the bone marrow, this could be, a positive result could be very useful in terms of understanding, if we need to intensify treatment or not.
And then just for ASH in general, were there any presentations or abstracts that particularly caught your eye in the myeloma space?
Well, I think one of the key themes in myeloma that I took away from it is really around newly diagnosed setting, the newly diagnosed myeloma setting. Of course, we had the late-breaking abstract with Dara-VRd and the Perseus study showing superior PFS over VRd in transplant-eligible patients. I mean, this sort of confirms it. I would say it's more practice-affirming for me personally. I had already changed my practice to be using quadruplets. But one of the interesting things that came out from this was that if you look at all the subgroups in that Perseus study, the one subgroup that may not have benefited or maybe not have benefited at all from quadruplet therapy were patients who are 65 years and older. And this is interesting because, when you look at some of the other studies that were done with quadruplet therapies, quadruplet regimens, one of which was the GEM 2017 FIT trial that was presented as well. And in that study, they had no transplant involved, but it was mostly transplant ineligible patients. Okay, it was mostly transplant ineligible patients. So the median age was older, over 70. I think it was 72 or 73. And what they did is they randomized patients to one of three arms. They either got VMP for 9 cycles, followed by Len/Dex, not a regimen we really use in the United States at all, but was used as a control. Or they got 18 cycles of KRD, or they got 18 cycles of Dara KRD. And the schema is a little bit more complicated than what I'm saying, but basically, when you look at treatment-related deaths in the Dara KRD arm, they were the highest of all three arms. And that raises the question of, it's not, so some people have said, oh, is this a carfilzomib effect? But it's not, because it wasn't seen in the KRD arm. But we're seeing potentially the same issue even on the PFS forest plots with Perseus. So it's starting to make me wonder, what is the extent to which we should be giving quadruplets? Is it literally everyone? Is it the addition of the daratumumab, or is it just giving four drugs to patients, causes some degree of toxicity? I mean, that's something that I think we really need to find out. We had the Ischia study, which was ESA-KRD versus KRD, and it's remarkable because the primary endpoint was MRD negativity. It wasn't looking at progression-free survival. And while I don't know that that's really going to be useful from a regulatory standpoint to get ESA-KRD, as an approved regimen, one of the things it does do is it helps to set the stage, along with some other studies that have been done before it, where we say, okay, a change in MRD at these specific time points, do they lead to a change in progression-free survival, or more importantly, a change in overall survival downstream? And that's where I think if we're lucky, we're going to get to a point where we can actually show that a change in MRD leads to a change in outcomes downstream. that may lead to it being able to be a valid surrogate endpoint. And that's, I think, a big discussion right now around MRD, both in the clinical trial space right now.
Definitely, thank you. And off of that, the role of MRD negativity as a prognostic indicator is kind of gaining traction. So, how do you view the evolving role of MRD monitoring in guiding treatment decisions moving forward?
Yeah, so one thing that wasn't published at ASH, but to me is one of the most important papers from published from 2023, was by Laura Rossignol and colleagues from the Spanish group. So the study itself was kind of not relevant from a maintenance standpoint, but it was looking at patients who got, standard triplet induction therapy with a transplant. And then what they did is patients were randomized to get either Lendex or ixazomib and Lendex. And ixazomib has sort of not really gained any traction as a maintenance regimen. And in fact, this trial was a negative study. The PFS was no different. It looked identical between the two arms. MRD negativity rates were the same, but it provided a very interesting experiment. You basically doubled your population size to be able to look at MRD kinetics over time. And one of the things that they did in the study is all patients who got to 2 years of maintenance, who were MRD negative at 10 to the minus sixth using flow, they were discontinued. So they went, basically, they used MRD to guide decision making here. And one of the interesting things is when you pool the data, the patients who were MRD negative, they had a 4 year progression-free survival from the time of stopping maintenance of 83%. I mean, that is pretty remarkable, right? That patients after 2 years of maintenance, if you're MRD negative at 10 to the minus six, you have an 83% progression-free survival. So, we also saw data from the MASTER trial, which has already shown that, at least 50% of the patients that were, as of the last report, were still off of treatment from that study. So I think, what's most prime and most ripe for using MRD as decision making is really for discontinuation. I think that's where the appetite is right now. We're at University of Chicago working on a study called MRD to Stop. Jordan, we spoke about that, I think, last year. And, we're hoping to have some updated data to share soon. But, I think it provides a really compelling strategy for using MRD to guide discontinuation, MRD negativity to guide discontinuation. Where I think is a little bit trickier is what to do with patients who have persistent MRD positivity. Does that justify intensifying therapy, adding therapies, continuing, intensified therapies? I mean, this is the thing that we just don't have a lot of data on, but is the flip, is the other side of the coin.
Wonderful. And are there any exciting advancements on the horizon for MRD detection?
As far as advancements, I think right now, we have three really good technologies, right? We have flow cytometry. One of the ways that's trying to be improved upon, especially in the peripheral blood, is the Spanish are working on something called blood flow, which takes a very large sample of blood, about 50 milliliters, and then doing CD138 selection on that blood sample, and then performing flow cytometry. So, in other words, you're selecting out the cells of interest, which are supposed to be the plasma cells. Flow, can only—I mean, you run into issues with validation if you're putting in too many cells into the test. But if you can select out the ones of interest and then run the test, then you're doing a better job. And they show improved detection using that method. I think the issue, of course, is that they're taking 50 cc's of blood. I think peripheral blood using next generation sequencing is another area that I already talked to you about that I think is really exciting. And then there's mass spectrometry, which is peripheral blood assay as well. And there are a few different techniques that are being investigated that we're involved in as well. And I think are certainly going to give patients an array of options to be able to detect disease or to be able to potentially circumvent a bone marrow biopsy in the future.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And my last question is, what are you excited to see moving forward in 2024 in the myeloma space?
Well, I mean, I certainly, where my interests lie is in MRD. So I love to see, more traction being gained for MRD guided discontinuation of therapy. I mean, I think that's super important. We look forward to, as I mentioned, sharing our data from MRD to stop, which is, a discontinuation study using MRD at 10 to the minus 6. I'd also like to see, as far as reporting is concerned, that MRD at 10 to the minus 6 get, more shine, so to speak. I think that that is really the most important cutoff, more so than 10 to the minus 5. I think that's super important. I'm also excited to understand better about, this is unrelated, but better about sequencing of cellular therapies and immunotherapies in myeloma. Does CAR T come first over bispecifics? And if it does, what's the best treatment to follow with? How are we going to do that? I don't think we got a lot of that information at ASH this year, but I do know that that's going to be an area of a lot of development, in particular, understanding the role of GPRC5D CAR T cell therapy, GPRC5D directed CAR T cell therapy, I should say. We already have a bispecific targeting GPRC5D, but there are a number of exciting CAR T products that are being investigated with that target as well. And anytime we get the FDA reviewing labels, I think that's important. So, seeing what happens with lines of therapy designation for CAR T is going to be, I think, super important. Both Abecma and Carvykti are being reviewed by the FDA to see if the lines of therapy designation will change. And I think that's going to be probably one of the most important developments in myeloma therapy this year.